The ultimate cost and schedule impact of the suspension will depend on the length of the suspension and the timing of restart of construction activities. As well, the speed at which the movement of people and materials returns to normal and the government and businesses return to normal will be key factors. So our preliminary assessment indicates that if a suspension lasts a total of 4 weeks, the impact is estimated to be US $75 to $125 million, inclusive of the demobilization, suspension, and restart impacts. In terms of schedule, we could see up to 6 to 8 weeks of schedule delay, including the suspension and remobilization periods. The incremental cost of any additional suspension is expected to have a day-to-day schedule impact and an approximate US $25 to $50 million per month cost impact, given that we expect lower fixed care and maintenance costs on the project while idle. So although it's not currently possible to predict when the temporary suspension of the project will be lifted, if we assume full construction activities are started in the second quarter, the soonest we would expect first production is mid-2022. So now for a few slides to show the construction progress across various portions of the project. On slide 31, you can see the primary crusher area where we're in the process of pouring concrete foundations and completing the platforms for ore transport conveyors. And this will take the crush material to the core floor stockpiles, providing feed for the mill. On slide 32, you can see the progress we've made in the grinding area of the concentrator, where we've been pouring concrete for the two SAG mills and four ball mills since May of 2019. Here you can see the two SAG mill foundations on the right of the photo, with the shell for SAG 1 in place just to the right of the red crane. In the center of the photo, you can see the foundations for the four ball mills and some of the structural steel that's being erected. And on the left side of the photo, you can see some of the 14 650 cubic meter rougher flotation cells that are being erected. So we will continue with concrete, structural steel, mechanical, and mill erection in this area through 2020. Here on slide 33, you can see a view of the shell components that have been installed for the first SAG mill. And we will start placing the shells for the two ball mills for the first grinding line once we remobilize. On slide 34, you can see a panoramic view of the tailings management facility. So we have completed the cofferdam here, which you can see in the left center of the photo. And we're in the process of installing a drainage system and hauling and placing materials for the starter dam just to the right of the photo. The platform for the tailings transport system is also near completion, and work is ongoing with respect to platform development for the tailings distribution system. On slide 35, you can see some of the progress on the pipeline, with the contractors working on multiple work fronts, developing the platform, trenching, stringing and bending pipe, and welding. And the photo shows the pipe stringing and welding for the 36-inch water makeup system. And you can see the trench for the pipeline just on the left-hand side of the photo. Construction of the 8-inch concentrate transport system will follow a similar process. And on slide 39, you can see the port site where we're progressing with both onshore and offshore activities. This photo shows progress of the desalination plant, with the foundations well advanced ahead of installation of the mechanical components and prefabricated modules. Overall, the project team continues to focus on advancing construction across all areas of the project, as well as advancing activities in the operational readiness front. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention, and I'll turn it back over to Don for closing remarks.
Okay, thank you, Alex. And we're on slide 38 now. As I said, these are unprecedented times that we are living in, and the COVID-19 pandemic has had a significant negative impact on the global economy and commodity markets, and the outlook remains uncertain. But there have been some positives in what has otherwise been a difficult first quarter of this year. March was particularly strong. The positives include that while our COVID-19 responses temporarily reduced production at some of our operations, in fact, all of our operations are still running. I've seen lately one of the banks has been keeping track of those that are closed, and it's something like 144 different sites are now shut down. Our steelmaking coal sales exceeded guidance, the revised guidance for the quarter, and by a reasonable amount. Our steelmaking coal adjusted site cost of sales are expected to be well below previous expectations in Q1. Our steelmaking coal logistics supply chain performed very well in March. The Elkview expansion project is progressing well, with completion expected in just 2 weeks, and that is a significant improvement structurally to our business for the long term, worth about $160 million of EBITDA at a coal price of $150. And then the Neptune facility upgrade project continues to advance. So looking forward on slide 39, our focus remains on managing the risks around COVID-19 in order to safeguard the health of our employees and our local communities. And at the same time, we continue to progress our four key priorities to add significant value to Teck over the next 24 months. First, the QB2 project, which, as I've said, is a key component of Teck's future growth, and it will help rebalance our portfolio. Then Race 21, with innovation transformation taking place, that will significantly improve our competitiveness. Then the Neptune upgrade project, again, long-term structural addition to value of the company. And finally, our company-wide CRP, cost reduction program, to reduce spending, with an increased target of total reductions of $1 billion of previously planned spending through to the end of this year. We have a strong financial position, and we are well positioned to weather the challenges around COVID-19. And with that, we would be happy to answer your questions. And I should say, as a reminder, we are all on phone lines from home, so please bear with us if there's a delay while we sort out who will answer your questions. So back to you, operator.
Thank you. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while participants register for questions. Thank you for your patience. First question is from Orest Walkovdal from Scotiabank. Your line's open.
Hi, good afternoon. A question about the go-forward CapEx, if I may. The $3.9 billion U.S. of remaining CapEx, I think you said that 69% of that is exposed to the peso. So that's about $2.7 billion by my math. And I'm just curious, of that amount, are those rates for most of the contractors and labor and stuff, are those locked in with respect to what they're charging you in peso, or are you seeing inflation on rates because of the weaker currency?
Okay, I'll turn that over to Alex to start, and Dale may want to chip in.
Yeah, so, Orest, the majority of the contracts we have out there are unit rate contracts, so with locked-in pricing. And with when you think about escalation, some of them have escalation built into the contracts, others have it fixed, so that have baked into the number, whether other ones have a rate of escalation built into the contract. So we have not seen any hyperinflation to date, and currently that we feel that the contracts we have in place tie ourselves to the current peso.
Okay, and then is there any thought to, given the spot FX is much weaker, is there any spot to, or any thought to just lock that in via FX hedges here?
Yeah, I'll take that one. So we have studied the potential of hedging the Chilean peso very intensely. We even have a special committee of the board that I work closely with as we look at the question. And, of course, there's always a significant risk if you do lock it in that if something were to happen to the project, for example, if social unrest were to rise again and somehow the project was cut off or halted, and that would probably be a situation where the peso would decline even further, then you would have locked in the pesos without the need to use them, and you would have quite a significant currency loss. So on balance, we decided that that was adding risk, and right now we're benefiting every single day with the currency where it is, and so we're taking the benefit as it comes, and each week we get closer to completion at these attractive exchange rates. So that's our current position, but we will continue to monitor it quite closely. So far we're benefiting now.
Okay, thanks. And just final question for me, if I could. Don, if I think I understood you that you're increasing your capital reduction target to $1 billion or by $400 million from what you issued with the guidance, is that all related to CapEx, or is that a mix of OpEx and CapEx? And can you give us any details?
Yeah, it's a combination of operating and CapEx. We've already identified over 900 of areas where we can go after. And I'll turn this over to Ron Millos, who's in charge of CRP. Ron?
Sure. Orris, the biggest part of the increase is likely to come from the capital side, but our sort of current estimate right now is looking at about two-thirds is going to be on the capital side and about one-third on the operating side. But once we move that target up to $1 billion, we'll see what's underneath all those numbers. We'll have a better sense. And it's spread amongst all the business units, and it's going to be hitting a number of the different line items on the financial statements, primarily those items that are expense in nature.
Okay. Well, I assume we'll get more clarity on that then with updated guidance in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and it'll be a moving target as we go forward throughout the year, as well as we fine-tune things.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question is from Chris Terry from Deutsche Bank. Your line's open.
Hi, Don and team. A couple of questions for me to run through. Just want to start in the coal division. The $65 recorded in 1Q, is that just really a result of the better volume, so it's more a unit basis, or was there something else that enabled you to lower the costs to be so far underneath the guidance?
So it also includes benefit from the cost reduction program, CRP, but I'll turn that over to Robin Sharma, please.
Yeah, that's the majority of that is cost reduction program related, so that would be repair, maintenance, and a pretty big reduction in contractors. So we saw kind of extending out of Q4, continued really, really strong results at the site as far as cutting the spending and cutting costs down. And the other benefit we saw through the first quarter for sure was the lower diesel price, and that also helped keep our costs down.
Okay. And does that 65 already back out anything related to COVID-19, or is there no impact from that? I'm just trying to make sure I've got a like-for-like number.
No, that would have no adjustments for COVID-19. And that, I think any adjustments that would occur would be disclosed in the quarter release when we get to it.
Okay, sounds good. And then just sticking with coal, I just wondered if you could comment a little bit. Obviously, a lot of focus on steel markets at the moment in the U.S., but also Europe, where you have some exposure on your coal volumes. I just wondered if you could comment on the state of the seaborne coal market, and in particular the ex-China steel market, and what you're seeing there for met coal. Thanks.
Okay, Ray O'Foley, over to you.
Thanks, Don. So, Chris, there is absolutely no doubt that COVID-19 is having an impact. We've seen number of steel producers announcing reduction or suspending production. And that's particularly been in Europe, the States, and India. The current cuts to hot metal production amount to about 8% or so of capacity, and that is capacity ex China and Russia. Now, when we look at what is happening also on the supply side, there is also risk, of course, with COVID-19, and we have seen a number of impacts. There was a closure of the Mongolia border. They just started ramping up exports again to China last week. But that's a loss of around 5 million tons or so of coking coal. Lower Chinese production also, February year-to-date, so that's their domestic coking coal production. That's removed another 5 million tons from the market. Lower seaborne prices also compared to the domestic coking coal in China, so we're continuing to see buying from China. And, of course, with China implementing stimulus measures, we're seeing the economy in China ramp up quicker now. And we've seen a number of supply disruptions also prior to COVID-19 and with COVID-19. There was a roof collapse at Anglo's Miranda North mine in January. We talked about our own issues with weather-related disruptions and rail blockades in January and February, wet weather in Australia, in February and March, and COVID-19 disruptions specifically, we've seen temporary mine closures announced in the States, in New Zealand, in South Africa, and those total somewhere around 18 million tons or so on an annualized basis. The other point to keep in mind as well is the fact that steel exports out of China year to date February, they're also down substantially. They're running at around 48 million tons annualized versus 2019 that was at 64. Overall, yes, we are closely monitoring the market for any potential impact with COVID-19. But so far, we have seen no impacts on our shipments and on our sales.
Thank you. The next question is from Jackie Prablowski. Your line's open. She's from BMO Capital Markets.
Thanks very much. I guess my first question I'll ask, I've got a question about Fort Hills. I mean, obviously we've seen oil prices weak and particularly Western Canadian Select. I'm hearing from a lot of people the question about whether you're going to take another write down at Fort Hills. I realize you just did one in Q4. So can I ask maybe just what the thought process would be, how frequently you assess write down? And what you'd need to see in order to make a decision to take a subsequent write-down on Fort Hills? Thanks.
Yeah, it's fairly straightforward, and we'll give the answer with our financial results about 3 weeks from now. But under IFRS accounting, every quarter we have to look at the assets and make an assessment as to whether an impairment event has occurred. Clearly, there has been a significant change in the outlook for the oil market, at least for the 6 to 24-hour period or for some time period. So we'll have to make that judgment. We'll look at the parameters that Suncor is using as well, and we'll make that decision then. Ron, is there anything you want to add to that?
No, I think that covers it. That's, technically every quarter when after you've taken an impairment, you're on the cusp. So if things get worse, you probably have a further impairment. If things get better, you'll reverse it. So that's just generally how the rules work.
Okay. On QB, with the delays to QB2 and understanding that it's up in the air right now, is there any changes to the way you're looking at subsequent approvals? So I know QB3, you had said you still wanted to see QB2 in production first before you would move on QB3. Now that your engineering work is so far advanced, she does this every time I'm on the phone. Is there any way that you could maybe accelerate QB3, or work to move that forward a little more concurrently?
Short answer is no. QB3 is on hold. We are totally focused on executing QB2 as well as we possibly can. That's our priority. QB3, of course, will be very exciting at a point in time, but we don't want to be distracted in any way from QB2 and getting that done.
Thank you. The next question is from Carlos D. Albright from Morgan Stanley. Your line's open.
Thank you very much. And Don, just a follow-up on the prior question, previous question on the Chilean peso exposure in QB2. So did I understand correctly, and the cost contracted the cost that you have contracted in the local currency, are those fixed, or are you facing any inflation that you have already incorporated into the new CapEx guidance that you provided? And I guess maybe in addition to that, how much of the equipment and services that you're contracting are actually made or produced in Chile versus how much are you importing into the country? That would be my first question, if I may ask a couple more would be any updates on the satellite asset portfolio. There was news that Suffer Now was potentially being in discussions to be partially sold. I wonder if you have any update that you can comment upon. And then finally, if there are any potential cost benefits that you can guide it to regarding the very sharp depreciation that we have seen in Latin America and Canada, how much, if you have any rough rule of thumb as to how much can the operations benefit in terms of that weakening of the currency? Thank you.
Okay, I'll take the second question and part of the third, and then Alex will be back to you for the first question. So on Project Satellite, as you might imagine, this is not the environment to discuss a potential transaction, so any activity on that front is on hold. And in fact, we've cut any capital spending on all five projects to the bare minimum in this environment, and we'll just have to wait till the world gets through COVID-19, which it will. On the third question, we'll give you more detailed numbers on that with our quarterly results 3 weeks from now, but just as an example, in our guidance for coal, where we say it's a range for the year of 63 to 67, and that had previously included a much higher number in Q1 than we achieved, so we should be able to do better. But at the midpoint of that range in U.S. dollars is about $46 for site costs, which obviously is quite an attractive number relative even to the recently declined price. So it does have quite an effect when you move from 130, 132 or so to 140 or 142, very beneficial, and we'll see something similar at Andacollo. Alex, back to you on the first one related to fixed prices.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, basically, our contracts, so the majority of our contracts, as I said earlier, are unit rate contracts, so we have fixed pricing for installation of the specific units. A portion of those contracts have the escalation built right into the fixed unit pricing. And another portion of those contracts have exposure to escalation. We do have escalation built into the capital estimate to cover for that. And we've seen an escalation rate of approximately 3% to date. With respect to the equipment they were referring to, I'm trying to determine whether you were referring to our contractor's equipment or if you're referring to the mining equipment and the and all of the mechanical equipment for the mills, et cetera. So maybe I'll touch on the majority of our major mechanical components for the mills, equipment like the mills, et cetera, the majority of those have been purchased from offshore suppliers who manufacture that type of equipment, which is quite special equipment or especially equipment that you know, there aren't a lot of manufacturers around the world. Our mobile equipment fleet will come from one of the big providers. And then our local contractors, depending on what equipment they're using, they either source it in Chile or they will be sourcing offshore. Again, some specialty equipment that you saw in those pictures, like the 600 ton crane, et cetera, are not the local manufacturer.
Okay, thank you. Our next question is from Greg Barnes from TD Securities. Your line's open. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I think you mentioned during the presentation that you have $400 million contingency built into the CapEx estimate. I assume you haven't moved into the contingency in any way at this point.
So this is a new bottoms-up estimate, Greg. Essentially, the remaining contingency in this new bottoms-up estimate is $400 million, or approximately $400 million U.S. Once we start going forward, should there be items that come up that increase costs or other things that come in that were not included in the estimate, those would start to draw on contingency. But right now, if you want to think about it, our contingency bucket is full at $400 million U.S. And where the exchange rate is right now, we will be seeing additional, let's call it credits from the Chilean exposure should it remain at $850.
Okay. And Alex, just this capital cost estimate that's been recalculated, was that done largely by Bechtel, or how involved was Teck in coming up with that new estimate?
So, I mean, I think Teck's involved in the process every step of the way, although Bechtel is our engineering, procurement, and construction manager, so they're the ones who actually manage things on a detailed level. So we've been involved in every step. The estimate is built up right from the bottom up for every individual contract. the pricing in those contracts, the units, the schedules. We go back and forth with the various contractors on the schedule to ensure that there's alignment in terms of that against the productivities that we're estimating. So Tech's very involved in it. It has a substantially good working relationship with Bechtel, and it is Bechtel machine driving that, but Tech certainly involved right across the whole process.
Okay. And just finally, Alex, once you get to the other side of this COVID situation and the travel restrictions come off and things like that, how long will it take to remobilize the workforce back to site and to ramp things back up to full construction progress?
Yeah, so I guess there's two things that's a function of. One is the function of the length of the suspension, and the other one is really a function of how well the, let's call it, their services and service providers are operating, you know, in terms of planes and buses, et cetera. So, you know, we have a view that we can get the workforce back on site inside that 4-week period and starting to produce points on the curve. But to get to full back to where we are, we probably expect that's going to be a little bit longer than 4 weeks, so maybe we're more in the six-week program to get back up to full production.
Thank you. The next question is from Oscar Cabrera from CIBC. Your line's open.
Thanks, operator. If we just stay on QB2 for a second, please. Could you provide the total gross of CapEx overrun before the depreciation tailwind you saw in the revision of the new number?
So Oscar, as a significant portion of the increases are related to the Chilean social unrest and other factors here, which have also contributed to the devaluation of the peso, we actually don't think it's meaningful to look at this issue independent of each other. So again, we've seen realized rates to date of about 730, and the updated estimates at 775, and again, indicated that there is quite a delta between current spot and the estimate at today's rate.
Okay, Alex, let me ask it this way. You mentioned in your opening remarks that about half of the CapEx overrun had to do with the social disturbance that you faced. What I'm trying to establish here is, like, you know, I know that the Chilean peso can provide another tailwind here, but at what point the project, you know, continues to drop back if you cannot get permits? So, in other words, have you factored in, you know, the plebiscite in October now in your estimates now?
So, in terms of the estimate, I think there's a couple things. We've progressed significantly with respect to permits, and we're working well with the authorities and the regulators. So we hope to see minimal further delays with respect to permitting when we restart. In terms of further social unrest, we've certainly looked at that from a risk perspective, but we have not built additional dollars or time in for further unrest, although we understand what the impacts of that can be, and we're doing work to ensure that we have materials, more materials than we need in place, et cetera, to mitigate should something else arise.
Okay, no, that's helpful. Thank you. Then, if I may, just the cost-saving part of the presentation, how do we put into context the, you know, approximately $300 million in savings that you're adding with Race 21 and the $500 million cumulative number to the end of 2020? Are they related somehow, or how should we think about 2020 in specific?
So if I could rephrase the question, make sure I understood it. How much does Race 21 activity contribute to our overall cost reduction? Is that what you're answering?
Yes, sir. That would be the question.
Okay. The Race 21 project is managed entirely separately from the CRP, the cost reduction program. And Race 21, the benefits of it, can be cost reduction, or it can be increased production and tonnage available for sale, and those create benefits as well. So they're kind of, they really are quite separate buckets as we go forward. The CRP is directed right at, you know, the current state of operations that we have, and similar to what we did during the long downturn from 2012 to 2016. So they're two different buckets.
But, you know, so if you're not spending any more capex in some of these risk 21 programs, then, you know, better just to look at the $1 billion cost savings or capital savings in 2020.
We've slowed down RACE 21 for two key reasons. One is, you know, COVID-19 affects the ability to execute some of these projects, but also because we're going to be guarding our capital very carefully during this phase of COVID-19.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Forrest, the $1 billion is for the period from when we started the program in the fourth quarter of 2019. So it's not, that whole $1 billion is not in 2020.
Thank you.
Operator?
Yes.
Operator, we've gone over time now. I think we'll call it there and hand this back over to Don for his closing remarks.
Okay, well, thank you, Fraser, and thank you all for attending today and for your questions. I want to say again that we were very pleased with the performance of the company in March, even though March was, you know, a pretty tough month worldwide for everybody, but our operations performed very well and really showed what they can do. We are being very, very careful around COVID-19 and will continue to do so. But the four key initiatives are continuing to progress, and each of them adds significant value to the company, and one by one they're getting completed, and we're very pleased to see we're so close to the Elkview plant being completed just a couple weeks from now, and what that can add in value is quite significant for the long term, and before you know it, Neptune will be finished too. You know, the world's in a pretty tough situation, but the world will fix itself. It always does. I don't know when it will be. Nobody knows when it will be, but it always does fix itself. And when we get through to that time, tech will be in very strong position with these key initiatives being completed and very, very strong free cash flow coming. And I look forward to the day when we can return significant amounts of capital to shareholder, possibly through a significant buyback or even a significant special dividend, and it will come when you least expect it. The future will be bright once we get through COVID-19. The world always fixes itself. I end every meeting with my own people, and I say, stay healthy, keep the faith, this too shall pass, and all will be well. Thank you very much for joining today. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you. The conference is now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.